She stared into the cold gloom and across the agricultural fields at her hired local workers. Under a false name, she had used some of her remaining hoarded assets to buy a small estate, hoping to live here, and just survive until she could be reunited with the others. Since her desperate flight, she had not seen or heard from them, nor had she let her guard down for an instant. Elrood still lived, and the hunters were still out there. Flat glow disks spread full-spectrum light over the fields, pampering the rows of exotic vegetables and fruits that would be sold at a premium to wealthy functionaries. Beyond the edges of the fields, the native vegetation of Beletejus was bristly and hardy, not welcoming at all. Kuensing's natural sunlight wasn't bright enough to foster sufficient photosynthesis for the delicate plants in the lady's crops. She felt the brisk cold against her face. Her sensitive skin, once caressed by an emperor, was now chapped and raw from the harsh elements. But she had vowed to be strong, to adapt and endure. And it would have been so much easier to endure if only she could tell the people she cared about that she was alive and safe. She ached to see them, but didn't dare make contact because of the risk to herself and those who had fled with her. Harvesting machinery clattered along the neat rows of crops, plucking ripe produce. The brilliant glow disks cast extended shadows like stealthy creatures that prowled the fields. Some of the shaggy hired workers joined in a sing-song chant as they moved about gathering crops too fragile for mechanical picking. Suspensor baskets, ready for market, waited at the pickup station. Only a few of her most loyal household retainers had been allowed to accompany her here in this new life. She hadn't wanted any loose ends, no one who could report to Imperial spies. Neither had she wanted to put faithful companions in danger. Only with extreme care did she dare talk with the few familiar people who lived near her on Beletejus. A handful of furtive conversations, quick glances, and smiles were the most she dared. Com eyes or operatives could be anywhere. With a carefully laid trail of identity documents, the lady had become a respectable woman named Lisette, a widow whose fictitious husband, a local merchant and minor official of Choam, had left her enough financial resources to run this modest estate. Her entire existence had altered. No more pampered activities at court, no music, banquets, or receptions, no functions with the Landsrad, not even tedious council meetings. She simply lived from day to day, remembering old times and longing for them, while accepting the reality that this new life might be the best she could ever obtain. Worst of all, she might never see her loved ones again. Like an inspector surveying her troops, the lady walked down the lanes of crops, assessing vermilion spiny fruits that dangled on suspended vines. She had worked hard to memorize the names of the exotic produce she grew. It was important to put up a convincing front, to be able to make idle conversation with anyone and avoid arousing suspicion. Whenever she appeared outside her manor house, she wore a lovely necklace of Ixian manufacture, a disguised hologenerator. It shrouded her face with a field that distorted her fine features, softened her cheekbones, widened her delicate chin, altered the color of her eyes. She felt safe enough. Pausing to look up, she saw a glittering rain of shooting stars near the horizon. Across the dim landscape, the lights of ranches and a distant village shimmered. But this was something else entirely. Artificial lights. Transports or shuttles? Beletejus was not a populous planet. Its fortunes and resources were small, its chief claim to history a dark and bloody one. Long ago, it had been the site of slave colonies, hardy but struggling villages from which slaves were harvested and subsequently planted on other worlds. She felt like a prisoner herself. But at least she had her life, and she knew her family was safe. No matter what, never let your guard down, my love, her husband had warned as he parted company from her. Never. In this constant state of alert, the lady noticed the spotlights of 3 ornithopters as they approached from the distant spaceport. The flying craft cruised low across the flat, parched landscape. They had turned on their full nighttime search beacons, though this was the best daylight Bella Tejus could manage, at the height of the double afternoon. She felt cold fingers wrap around her heart, but nonetheless stood tall and drew her dark blue cloak around her. Her house colors would have been preferable, but she no longer dared even keep such items in her wardrobe. A voice called from the main house. "Madame Lisette, someone is coming, and they refuse to answer our hails." Turning, she saw the narrow-shouldered figure of Omer, one of her primary assistants from the old days, a man who had accompanied her here, not sure what else to do. Certainly nothing else would be as important or fulfilling, Omer had assured her, and she was grateful for his devotion. The lady considered fleeing the approaching thopters, but dismissed the idea. If these intruders were whom she feared they might be, she had no chance of escape. And if her intuition was wrong, she wouldn't need to run. The clustered ornithopters arrived overhead, wings fluttering and engines roaring. They sat down roughly, indiscriminately, upon her planted fields, knocking her full-spectrum glow discs out of alignment and crushing crops. When the doors of the 3 ships slid open and troops emerged, she knew she was doomed. In a dreamlike vision, she thought back to a happier time, the arrival of quite different troops. It had been in her younger days at the Imperial Court, when the headiness of being a royal courtesan had begun to fade. The Emperor had spent much time with her for a while, but, after his interest waned, he had moved on to other concubines. It was to be expected. She hadn't felt snubbed, since Elrud continued to provide for her. But then one day, after the rebellion on Ikaz had been crushed, she had watched a victory parade of Imperial fighters marching down the streets of Kaitane. The banners were so bright they made her eyes ache, the uniforms perfect and clean, the men so brave. At the head of the column, she had caught her first glimpse of her future husband, a proud warrior with broad shoulders and a broad grin. Even from a distance, his very presence had dazzled her, and she had felt her passions awaken, seeing him as the greatest among all of the returning soldiers. These soldiers arriving today on Bella Tejus were different, though, much more frightening in the dress gray and black of Sardaukar uniforms. A Berseg troop commander stepped forward, flashing his rank insignia. With an upward chop of his hand, he signaled for his men to take up their positions. Maintaining her pretense with only a shred of hope, the lady strode forward to meet him, chin high. "I am Madame Lisette, the owner of this estate." Her voice was hard as she scowled over at the destroyed crops. "Do you or your employers intend to make reparations for all the property damage your clumsiness just caused?" "Shut your mouth," one of the soldiers snapped, snatching up his laser gun. Foolish, the lady thought, I could have been wearing a shield. If so, and if he had fired, this section of Bella Tejus would have been obliterated in a pseudo-atomic explosion. The Berseg commander held up his hand to silence the soldier, and she recognized the planned gambit. A brash, uncontrolled soldier to intimidate her, a firm military leader showing the face of reason. Good soldier, bad soldier. "We are here on Imperial orders," said the Berseg. "We're investigating the whereabouts of surviving traitors of a certain renegade house. Through the right of acquisition, we require your cooperation." "I am unfamiliar with the legalities," the lady said, "but I know nothing of renegades. I'm just a widow trying to run a modest farm here. Allow my attorneys to consult with you. I'll be happy to cooperate in whatever manner I can, though I'm afraid you will be disappointed.
We won't be disappointed, the brash soldier growled.
Around them, her hired workers had ceased their activities, frozen in place. The Berseg stepped forward and stood directly in front of the lady, who did not flinch. He studied her face, frowning. She knew her hollow-masked appearance did not match what the man expected to see. She stared back at him, meeting his flat gaze. Before she understood his intention, his hand snatched her Ixion necklace and yanked it away. She felt no different, but she knew her disguise had dissolved.
"That's more like it," said the Berseg.
"You know nothing of renegades, eh?" He laughed scornfully. She glared at him. Sardaukar troops continued to file out of the three thopters, taking up positions around her. Some of them burst into her manor house, while others searched the barn, sun silo, and other outbuildings. Did they expect her to be harboring a major military force? Compared to her accustomed lifestyle, it seemed she could barely afford new clothes and hot food. Another grim-faced Sardaukar grabbed her arm. She tried to pull away, but he pushed up the sleeve of her cloak and, in a flash, scratched her with a small curette. She gasped, thinking the soldier had poisoned her. But the Sardaukar stood back calmly to analyze the blood sample he had stolen.
"Identity confirmed, sir," he said, looking over at his Berseg commander.
"Lady Shandovernius of Ix." The troops stepped back, but Shando did not move. She knew what was coming. For over a year, the old emperor had grown increasingly irrational, his mind failing, his body trembling. Elrud suffered under more delusions than usual, more hatred than one body should have contained. But he remained the emperor, and his decrees were followed explicitly. The only question in her mind was whether they would torture her first to acquire information she didn't have about Dominic's whereabouts, or whether they would just finish the job. Through a side door of the big house, Omer came running, shouting. His black hair was in disarray. He waved a crude hunting weapon he had found in a storage locker. Such a fool, she thought. Brave, dear, and loyal, but nonetheless a fool.
"My lady!" Omer shouted. "Leave her alone!"
A few of the Sardaukar aimed at him and at the shaggy workers in the field, but most kept their weapons trained on her. She looked up to the sky and thought of her loving husband and children and hoped only that they wouldn't meet similar ends. Even at this moment, she had to admit that, given the choice, she would do it all again. She did not regret the loss in prestige or riches that leaving the royal court had cost her. Shando had known a love that few members of the nobility had ever experienced. "Poor Rudy," she thought with a flash of pity. "You never understood that kind of love." As usual, Dominic had been right. In her mind, she saw him again as he was when she had first met the Earl of House Vernius, a handsome young soldier returned victorious from battle. Shando raised one hand to touch the vision of Dominic's face one last time. Then all the Sardaukar opened fire. "I must rule with eye and claw, as the hawk among lesser birds." Duke Paulus Atreides, The Atreides Assertion. Duke Leto Atreides, ruler of the planet Caladan, member of the Landsrad, head of a great house. These titles meant nothing to him. His father was dead. Leto felt small. Defeated and confused, he was not ready for the burdens that had been thrust upon him so cruelly at the age of 15. As he sat in the uncomfortable, overlarge chair, where the blustery old duke had so often held formal and informal court, Leto felt out of place, an impostor. "I am not ready to be duke."
He had declared 7 days of official mourning, during which he'd been able to sidestep most of the difficult business as head of House Atreides. Simply dealing with the condolences from other great houses proved almost too much for him, especially the formal letter from Emperor Elrud IX, written, no doubt, by his chamberlain, but signed with the old man's palsied hand. "A great man of the people has fallen," the Emperor's note read. "You have my sincere condolences and prayers for your future." For some inexplicable reason, this had sounded to Leto like a threat. Something sinister in the slant of the signature, perhaps, or in the selection of words. Leto had burned the message in the fireplace of his private quarters. Most important of all to him, Leto received heartfelt gestures of grief from the people of Caladan. Fresh flowers, baskets of fish, embroidered banners, poems and songs written by would-be bards, carvings, even drawings and paintings depicting the old duke in his glory, victorious in the bull ring. In private, where no one could see his weakness, Leto cried. He knew how much the people had loved Duke Paulus, and he remembered the feeling of power that had blanketed him the day he and his father had stood holding their bull's head trophy in the Plaza de Toros. At that time, he had longed to become Duke himself, had felt the love and loyalty wrapped around him. House Atreides. Now he wished for any other fate in the universe. Lady Helena had locked herself in her chambers and ignored the servants who tried to attend her. Leto had never observed much love or affection between his parents, and right now he couldn't tell if his mother's grief was sincere or merely an act. The only people she agreed to see were her personal priests and spiritual advisers. Helena clung to the subtle meanings she pried loose from verses of the Orange Catholic Bible. Leto knew he needed to bring himself out of this morass. He had to reach deep for strength and turn to the business of running Caladan. Duke Paulus would have scorned Leto's misery and chastised him for not immediately facing the priorities of his new life. "Grieve during your private time, lad," he would have said, "but never reveal any sign of weakness on the part of House Atreides." Silently, Leto vowed to do his best. This would be the first of many sacrifices he would no doubt have to make in his new position. Prince Romber came up beside Leto as he sat in the heavy ducal chair in the empty meeting hall. Leto brooded, his eyes fixed on a large portrait on the opposite wall that showed his father in full matador regalia. Romber put a hand on his companion's shoulder and squeezed. "Leto, have you eaten? You've got to maintain your strength." Taking a deep breath, Leto turned to look at his comrade from Ix, whose broad face was filled with concern. "No, I haven't. Would you care to join me for breakfast?" He rose stiffly from the uncomfortable chair. It was time to go about his duties. Thufir Hawat accompanied them at a morning meal that extended for hours as they laid out plans and strategies for the new regime. During a pause in the discussion, the warrior Mantat bowed his head and met young Leto's gray-eyed gaze. "If I have not yet made it apparent, my duke, I give you my utmost loyalty and renew my pledge to House Atreides. I will do everything I can to assist and advise you." Then his expression hardened. "But you must understand that all decisions are yours and yours alone. My advice may contradict Prince Romber's or your mother's, or that of any other advisers you choose. You must decide in each case. You are the Duke. You are House Atreides." Leto trembled, feeling the responsibility hover over him like a gilled highliner ready to crash. "I'm aware of that, Thufir, and I'll need all the assistance I can get." He sat up straight and sipped sweet cream from a bowl of warm pundi rice pudding, prepared by one of the chefs who knew it had been his favorite as a boy. Now it didn't taste the same, though. His taste buds seemed dulled. How goes the investigation into my father's death? Was it truly an accident, as it appears, or only made to look that way? The Mentat frowned, and a troubled expression clouded his leathery face. I'm hesitant to say this, my Duke, but I fear it was murder. Evidence is mounting of a devious plan indeed. What? Romber said, pounding his fist on the table. His face flushed. Who did this to the Duke? How? He felt affection not only for Leto, but for the Atreides patriarch who had granted sanctuary to him and his sister. A visceral sinking feeling told Romber the motivation might have been to punish Paulus for showing kindness to the Ixion exiles. I am the Duke, Romber, Leto said, resting a hand on his friend's forearm. I will have to handle this. Leto could almost hear the wheels humming inside the Mentat's complex mind. Awat said, Chemical analysis of muscle tissue in the Seleucid bull revealed faint traces of two drugs. I thought the beasts were checked before every fight. Leto narrowed his eyes, but for a moment he could not drive away the memory flashes of his younger days, when he had gone to look at the massive bulls in the stables and puffy-eyed stablemaster Eresk had let him feed the beasts, to the horror of the stable boys. Was our veterinarian in on a plot? The usual tests were performed as required before the paseo. A frown on his red-stained lips. Thufir tapped his fingers on the table as he marshaled his thoughts and assessed his answer. Unfortunately, the prescribed analyses tested for the wrong things. The bull had been enraged by a harsh stimulant that gradually built up in its body over days, delivered in time-released amounts. That wouldn't have been enough, Leto said, flaring his nostrils. My father was a good fighter. The best. The Mentat shook his shaggy head. The bull was also given a neutralizing agent, a chemical that counteracted the neurotoxin in the Duke's banderillas and simultaneously triggered a release of the stimulant. When the bull should have been paralyzed, the stimulant was increased instead. The beast became an even more dangerous killing machine, just as the old Duke was growing tired. Leto glowered. With an angry lurch, he rose from the breakfast table and glanced up at the omnipresent poison snooper. He paced, letting his rice pudding grow cold. Then he turned and spoke sharply, summoning all the techniques of leadership he had been taught. Mentat, give me a prime projection. Who would do this? Thufir sat motionless as he entered deep Mentat mode. Data streamed through the computer inside his skull, a human brain that simulated the capabilities of the ancient, hated enemies of mankind. Most likely possibility, a personal attack from a major political enemy of House Atreides. Because of the timing, I suspect it may be a punishment of the old Duke for his support of House Vernius. My suspicion exactly, Romber muttered. The son of Dominic Vernius seemed very much an adult now, hardened and tempered, no longer just a good-natured study companion who had lived a pampered life. Since coming to Caladan, he had trimmed down, tightened his muscles. His eyes had taken on a flinty gleam. "But no house has declared Canley on us," Leto said. "In the ancient rite of vendetta there are requirements, forms to be followed. Are there not, Thufir?" "But we can't trust all of the old Duke's enemies to adhere to such niceties," Hawat said. "We must be very cautious." Romber reddened, thinking of his own family's ouster from Ix. "And there are those who twist the forms to match their needs." "Secondary possibility," the Mentat continued. "The target could have been Duke Paulus himself, and not House Atreides, the result of a small vendetta or personal grudge. The culprit could perhaps be a local petitioner who didn't like a decision the Duke had made. Though this murder has galactic consequences, its cause could, ironically, be a trivial thing." Leto shook his head. "I can't believe that. I saw how much the people loved my father. None of his subjects would turn on him, not a single one." Hawat did not flinch, My Duke, do not overestimate the strength of love and loyalty, and do not underestimate the power of personal hatred. What's a better possibility? Romber inquired. Howard looked his Duke in the eye. An attack to weaken House Atreides. The death of the Patriarch leaves you, my lord, in a vulnerable position. You are young and untrained. Leto drew in a deep breath, but restrained his temper as he listened. Your enemies will now see House Atreides as unstable, and could make a move against us. Your allies may also see you as a liability and support you with somewhat limited enthusiasm. This is a very dangerous time for you. The Harkonnens? Leto asked. Hawat shrugged. Possibly. Or some ally of theirs? Leto pressed his hands against his temples and drew another deep breath. He saw Romber looking uneasily at him. Continue your investigation, Thufir, Leto said. Since we know that drugs were introduced to the Seleucid bull, I suggest you target your interrogations around the stables. The stable boy Duncan Idaho stood in front of his new duke, bowing proudly, ready to swear his fealty again. The household staff had cleaned him up, though he still wore stable clothes. The ruined garments he'd been given for the ill-fated final bullfight had been discarded. His curly black hair was disheveled. A rage burned inside him. He was certain that Duke Paulus's death could have been avoided if someone had only listened to him. The grief struck him sharply, and he agonized over whether he might have done more. Should he have insisted harder or spoken to someone other than Stablemaster Iresk? He wondered if he should reveal what he had tried to do, but for the moment held his tongue. Looking too small in the ducal chair, Leto Atreides narrowed his gray eyes and skewered Duncan with a gaze. Boy, I remember when you joined our household. His face looked thinner and much older than it had been when Duncan had first stood inside the castle hall. It was just after I escaped from Ix with Romber and Kylea. Both of the Vernius refugees also sat in the main hall, as did Thufir Hawat and a contingent of guards. Duncan glanced over at them, then returned his attention to the young duke. "I heard stories of your escape from the Harkonnens, Duncan Idaho," Leto continued, "of how you were tortured and imprisoned. My father trusted you when he gave you a position here at Castle Caladan. You know how unusual it was for him to do that?" He leaned forward on the dark wooden chair. Duncan nodded. Yes, my lord. He felt a hot flush of guilt on his face at having failed the benefactor who had been so kind to him. Yes, I know. But someone drugged the Seleucid bulls before my father's last fight, and you were one of those tending the beasts. You had ample opportunity. Why didn't I see you at the paseo when all the others marched around the arena? I remember looking for you. His voice became much sharper. Duncan Idaho, were you sent here, all innocent-looking and indignant, as a secret assassin in the employ of the Harkonnens? Duncan stepped back, appalled. Indeed not, my lord Duke, he cried. I tried to warn everyone. For days I knew something was wrong with the bulls. I told Stablemaster Iresk again and again, but he wouldn't do anything. He just laughed at me. I even argued with him. That's why I wasn't at the paseo. I was going to go warn the old duke myself, but instead the Stablemaster locked me in one of the dirty stalls during the fight. Tears welled up in his eyes. All the fine clothes your father gave me were ruined. I didn't even see him fall in the arena. Surprised at this, Leto sat up in his father's large chair. He looked over at Hawat. "I will find out, my lord," the Mentat said. Leto scrutinized the boy. Duncan Idaho stood before him, showing no fear, only deep sadness. As he studied him, Leto thought he recognized an openness and a heartfelt devotion on the young face. By appearances, this 9-year-old refugee seemed truly glad to be part of Castle Caladan, despite his demeaning, thankless chores as a stable boy. Leto Atreides did not have many years of experience in judging devious people and weighing the hearts of men. But he had an intuition that he could trust this earnest boy. Duncan was tough and intelligent and fierce, but not treacherous. "Be cautious, Duke Leto," he told himself. "There are many tricks in the Imperium, and this could be one of them." Then he thought of the old stablemaster. Iresk had been with Castle Caladan ever since the arranged marriage of Leto's parents. Could such a plan have been so many years in germination? Yes, he supposed it could, though he trembled at the implications. Unaccompanied, the Lady Helena glided into the reception hall, taking furtive steps. Deep shadows hovered around her eyes. Leto watched his mother slip into the empty chair beside his, the one reserved for times when she had sat beside her husband. Straight-backed and without words, she examined the young boy before them. Moments later, Stablemaster Iresk was unceremoniously brought into the hall by Atreides' guards. His shock of white hair was mussed, and his baggy eyes seemed wide and uncertain. When Thufir Hawat finished summarizing the story Duncan had told, the Stablemaster laughed, and his bony shoulders sagged with exaggerated relief. "After all the years I served you, would you believe this stable rat, this Harkonnen?" He rolled his puffy eyes in indignation. "Please, my lord." Overly dramatic, Leto thought. Hawat saw it too. Iresk placed a finger to his lips, as if considering a possibility. "Now that you mention it, my lord, it could well be that the boy himself was poisoning the bull. I couldn't watch him every moment." "That's a lie," Duncan shouted. "I wanted to tell the Duke, but you locked me in a stall. Why didn't you try to stop the bullfight? I warned you and warned you. And now the Duke is dead." Hawat listened, his eyes distant, his lips moist and cranberry-stained from a fresh swallow of sappho juice. Leto saw he had entered Mentat mode again, racing through all the data he recalled of the events involving young Duncan and Iresk as well. "Well?" Leto asked the stablemaster. He forced himself not to think of old times with the lanky man who had always smelled of sweat and manure. "The stable rat may have prattled some at me, my lord, but he was afraid of the bulls. I can't simply cancel a bullfight because a child thinks the beasts are terrifying," he snorted. "I took care of this pup, gave him every chance." "Yet you didn't listen to him when he warned you about the bulls. And now my father is dead," Leto said, noting that Iresk suddenly seemed afraid. "Why would you do that?" "Possible projection," Hawat said. "Through the Lady Helena, Iresk has worked for House Rachis all his life. Rachis has had ties to the Harkonnens in the past, as well as an adversarial relationship with Ix. He may not even be aware of his part in the overall scheme, or..." "What? This is absurd," Iresk insisted. He scratched his white hair. "I have nothing to do with the Harkonnens." He flashed a glance at the Lady Helena, but she refused to meet his gaze. "Don't interrupt my Mentat," Leto warned. Thufir Hawat studied Lady Helena, whose icy stare was leveled at him. Then his gaze slid to her son, where it remained as he continued to lay out his projection. Summary: the marriage of Paulus Atreides to Helena of House Rachis was dangerous even at the time. The Landsrad saw it as a way to weaken Rachis' Harkonnen ties, while Count Ilben Rachis accepted the marriage as a last-ditch effort to salvage some of his family fortune at the time they were losing Arrakis. As for House Atreides, Duke Paulus received a formal Choam directorship and became a voting member of the council, something this family might never otherwise have achieved. When the wedding party came here with Lady Helena, however, perhaps not all of her retainers granted their full loyalty to Atreides. Contact could have been made between Harkonnen agents and Stablemaster Iresk, without Lady Helena's knowledge, of course. "That's wild conjecture, especially for a Mentat," Iresk said. He looked for support from anyone in the room, Leto noticed, with the exception of Helena, whose eyes he now seemed to avoid. On his thin throat, his Adam's apple bobbed up and down. Leto stared at his mother sitting in silence beside him, at the set of her jaw. A sharp cold sliced unbidden down his spine. Through the carved wood of their closed bedroom door, Leto had heard her words concerning his father's Vernius policy. "You're the one who's made a choice here, Paulus, and you've made the wrong one." Now the words echoed in Leto's head. "That choice will cost you and our house dearly."
Nobody really watches a stable master, Leto," Romber pointed out in a low voice.
But Leto continued to observe his mother. Stablemaster Iresk had come to Caladan as part of Helena's wedding entourage from Richies. Could she have turned on him? What sort of hold did she have on the man? His throat went dry as all the pieces interlocked in his mind with a sudden realization that must have been similar to what Amentat experienced. She had done it. Lady Helena Atreides herself had set the wheels in motion. Oh, perhaps she'd had some outside assistance, possibly even from Harkonnens. And most certainly Iresk had been the one to carry out the actual details. But she herself had made the decision to punish Paulus. He knew it in the core of his soul. With her 15-year-old son, she would now control Caladan and make the decisions she believed best. "Leto, my son, you are Duke Atreides now." Those had been his mother's words only moments after her husband's death. An odd reaction for a shocked and grief-stricken woman.
"Please stop this," Iresk said, wringing his hands. "My lord, I would never betray the house I serve."
He pointed at Duncan.
"But you know this stable rat must be a Harkonnen. He came from Gedi Prime not that long ago."
Lady Helena sat rigidly, and when she finally spoke, her voice cracked, as if she hadn't used it much in recent days. She leveled a challenging look at her son.
"You've known Iresk since you were a child, Leto. Would you accuse a member of my entourage? Don't be ridiculous."
"No accusations yet, Mother," Leto said very carefully. "It's just discussion at this point." As leader of House Atreides, he had to work hard to distance himself from his childhood, from when he had been an eager boy asking the white-haired stablemaster if he could see the bulls. Iresk had taught him how to pet various animals, ride some of the older mounts, tie knots, and fix harnesses. But the wide-eyed child Leto was the new Duke of House Atreides. "We must study the evidence before we draw any conclusions." Emotions roiled across Iresk's face, and suddenly Leto was afraid of what the stablemaster might say. Pressed into a corner and afraid for his life, would he implicate Helena? The guards in the hall listened attentively. Kylia watched, drinking in every detail. Others would no doubt hear and repeat everything that was spoken here. The scandal would rock Caladan, perhaps the Landsrat itself. Even if his mother had arranged for the accident at the bullfight, even if Iresk had done it under orders, or because he had been bribed or blackmailed somehow, Leto did not dare let the man confess it here. He required the truth, but in private. If word got out that Lady Helena had been behind the old Duke's death, it would tear House Atreides apart. His own rule could be damaged beyond repair, and he would have no choice but to deal out the harshest possible justice to his own mother. He shuddered as he thought of the play Agamemnon, and the curse of Atreus that had dogged his family since the dawn of history. He drew a deep breath, knowing he must be strong.
"Do what you must, lad," his father had said. "No one can blame you for that, as long as you make the right decisions."
But what was the right decision now? Helena stood up from her chair and spoke to Leto in a cool, maternal tone.
The death of my husband was no treachery. It was a punishment from God."
She gestured toward Romber and Kailia, who seemed stunned by the proceedings.
"My beloved Duke was punished for his friendship with House Vernius, for allowing these children to live in our castle. Their family has broken the commandments, and Paulus still embraced them. My husband's pride killed him, not a lowly stable master. It's as simple as that."
"I've heard enough, Mother," Leto said. Helena gave him an indignant, withering glare, as if he were a child.
"I am not finished speaking. There is much to being a duke that you couldn't possibly understand yet."
Leto remained seated, putting all the power he could muster into his voice and composure.
"I am the Duke, Mother, and you will be silent, or I shall have the guards forcibly evict you from the hall and lock you in one of the towers."
Helena's skin paled, and her eyes went wild as she fought to contain her shock. She couldn't believe her own son had spoken to her in this manner, but thought better of pressing him. As usual, she struggled to maintain appearances. She had seen similar expressions on the old Duke's face, and didn't dare bring the storm closer. Though it would have been better for him to remain silent, Iresk shouted,
"Leto, boy, you can't believe this fatherless stable rat over me!"
Leto looked at the frantic, scarecrowish man and compared his demeanor with the proud young Duncan's. Iresk's puffy-eyed face sparkled with perspiration.
"I do find him more credible, Iresk," Leto said slowly. "And never call me boy again."
Hawat stepped forward.
"We might retrieve further information through deep interrogation. I shall personally question this stable master."
Leto's gaze fell on his mentat.
"In private would be best, Thufir. No one but you."
He closed his eyes for the briefest moment and swallowed hard. Later, he knew, he would have to send a message to Hawat that the stable master must not be allowed to survive the interrogation, for fear of what else he might reveal. The mentat's fractional nod told Leto that he understood much that had been left unsaid. All information Hawat extracted would remain a secret between himself and his duke. Iresk howled as the guards grasped his thin arms. Before the stable master could shout anything, Hawat clapped a hand over his mouth. Then, as if it had been timed to occur during the moment of greatest confusion, the guards opened the main hall doors to allow the entry of a uniformed man. He strode in, eyes fixed on Leto, and Leto alone, who sat on the chair at the end of the hall. His electronic identity badge marked him as an official courier, newly disembarked from a lighter at Kala City Spaceport. Leto stiffened, knowing this man could not possibly bear good tidings.
"My Lord Duke, I bring terrible news."
The courier's words sent an electric shock through everyone in the court. The hall guards holding Iresk captive stood still, and Hawat gestured for them to leave before the announcement. The messenger marched up to the chair and stood straight, then drew deep breaths to prepare himself. Knowing the situation here on Caladan with the new Duke and the exiled Ixians, he chose his words carefully.